Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Aelia Deo, who is the author of Seven Cups of Consciousness, Change Your Life by Connecting to the Higher Realms. Aelia opened the first alternative health clinic in Tularide, Colorado, and she has a international healing practice through her online practice, and we're pleased to have her with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Susan. It's great to be here.
So, would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about the journey that you went through that I guess was a prelude to writing the book?
Absolutely. I actually started my my journey in alternative health at a very young age. I was highly empathic as a child and intrigued with alternative health and started exploring it actually when I was about 15. And then I went on and got my massage degree when I was attending Lewis and Clark College and was intrigued with alternative medicine and started Reiki, became a Reiki master, and then went on and got my master's in Oriental medicine, moved to Telluride, Colorado, where I opened up the first alternative healing clinic. And then in 2001, so I had had maybe 6 years in practice as an acupuncturist, and every weekend would go and do different seminars and retreats and studying and just was this sponge for information. And then in 2001, I was actually lying on a sound table, which is a table filled with water. Speakers are underneath, music playing through the water, vibrating. And literally in 30 seconds, I had this huge flash, total awareness of these other dimensions, other realms, consciousness, awareness of previous incarnations that I remember just kind of came right online. And then after that, what I call enlightenment moment, that awareness of these other dimensions and people's feelings and their challenges and what they were really after kept getting stronger and stronger. So it really forced me to create very particular modalities and protocols and practices to sustain sanity while maintaining high levels of awareness and empathic sensations. So that's really what prompted me to write the book.
Great. Well, you talk about, and you had pretty sudden awareness, although a lot of people have more of a step-by-step awareness, that we live in a multidimensional reality. Can you go into that a little bit more so maybe someone who's never experienced that will know what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we actually all experience it differently. But every single person does. So when we dream, we're actually tapping into these other dimensions. When we fantasize, when we use our imagination, we are exploring a different reality other than the physical one. So we're all multidimensional beings. The variable is, are we aware of it, and do we have vocabulary to explain what it is we're experiencing?
Yeah, there's certain professions that intuition plays a very important part in. Like if you're a fighter pilot, for example, in battle, if you're a soldier in a war zone, if you're a trauma surgeon, just looking at a patient that is beat up and dying, and you got to figure out what to do in 5 minutes or it's all over. So,
yeah.
You know, we all have these moments where our connection to the higher realms becomes very, very critical. And some people have jobs that are, you know, that happens more often than not, the paramedics, the firefighters, you know.
Yeah, the
911
moment.
You know, that's the way I think I would explain it to people, that sometimes you just know something and you don't know how you know it. And that is a connection to probably your guide, your higher self, something protective, usually, so that you don't get in trouble or make the wrong decision or walk down the wrong alley, you know, that might be the last thing you do.
I think that's a great way of explaining it. And it really is kind of beyond our mind. Our mind picks up the information, the guidance, the intuition. But I do think that there is some other energetic aspect of us that is tapping into this wider perspective. And, you know, you can call it guides, you could call it God, you could also call it some divine wise part of you. And so I think it's really important that as we journey and we become more intuitive and more spiritually aware or sensitive, to maintain one's power as opposed to giving your power to angelic beings, to your guides, to some teacher, mm-hmm. to some person who has authority. And so, you know, it's a fine balance of receiving information and then maintaining your own autonomy.
Yeah, the way I kind of look at it is when you're in communication with your higher self, it sounds like you. I mean, it's a familiar energy mm-hmm. compared to being in communication with some other other source. But it knows a lot more than you would know just in the third dimension. You know, it knows things
yeah.
you don't know, and it's telling you things that then come true, or showing you ways that, or say a solution to a problem that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise because it was so far out, and yet it is the solution. So that information has to be coming from another realm that is outside of space and time, because if it was in space and time, it wouldn't have the information.
So true, and it would have a different vibrational frequency. Yeah, you're right on.
Right.
Absolutely.
But it does sound like you. I mean, if mm-hmm. you do hear voices, not they're not voices, obviously, they're thoughts, but mm-hmm. if you have a conversation with yourself, and the conversation on the other side of the conversation has got information that you couldn't possibly have, then that's likely your higher self. So
yeah.
But then there's other things, like I'm a trauma surgeon in the past, and I had a patient at the Brook Army burn unit that said that she woke up in the middle of the night and a voice screamed at her, and there was nobody in the house, "Get out now." And so she just ran out the front door, and then the house exploded because it was a gas leak. And
wow.
So she got her back burned. But that voice was not her higher self. That voice was like an audible voice.
That would be a guide stepping in.
Right.
How amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, that can happen. You know,
fortunately,
that
she listened.
Kind of thing. Yeah, so there are some very, very strange... I used to question my trauma patients all the time about their guidance. I had a patient one time that at 3 a.m, her friends talked her into going into a Waffle House to eat, and they proceeded to get into an argument with the cook, and the cook took a condiment tray and broke it over her head, and she had massive numbers of lacerations on her face. And so I walk in, and I say to her, I said, "Didn't something tell you not to go out tonight?" And she says, "Yeah." I go, "Well, why did you listen to it?" She said, "Because my friends talked me into it."
Right.
But, you know, most of us, when there is a danger out there, you know, we get some sort of inner guidance, like, stay home, you know, don't go out. This mm-hmm. is not a good night to go out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I know, and it's interesting, you know, I think the more aware we become, the more important it is to listen to those intuitive little nudges that we do get.
Yeah.
And I kind of think of it as the more awake you become, the more narrow your path. So if you're not
that's
very
true.
Awake...
You no longer have
yeah.
free will, which is illusionary anyway. So,
I know. Well, I mean, I think free will, there's so many debates on that one. But I think the more aware we become, the more we have the capacity to make choices. But if we're completely asleep, then we really don't have an option to make a choice because we're not even aware of what we're doing and the impact of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And it's like, you know, the more conscious you become, there is a correct path that is laid out before you that is the optimal path. You know, they talk mm-hmm. a lot about now optimal timelines. You know, we're in a very critical time period right now where certain timelines are collapsing and other ones are opening up. And it's so interesting that you know, we want to make choices for the optimal timeline. Isn't that an interesting concept?
It is, and I would phrase it more, or not differently, I mean, just a little differently in terms of going with the most harmonic vibration. And
right.
And so when we're
right.
in that harmonic state internally and with our choices, our energy fields, our consciousness, then we get guided into this flow. And discordant, chaotic fields have a lower consciousness. And I, when mm-hmm. I do my energy work with clients and also in my daily meditations, and energy balancing sessions, I perceive that there are these dimensions that hold very particular grids or frameworks that hold discordant frequencies and consciousness, and that those dimensions with those grids are dissolving and collapsing. And so if we're holding our energy in this discordant stance and these grids collapse, there's nothing to tap into.
Right.
Which is
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. The consciousness is shifting on planet Earth. How exciting.
It's about time, isn't it? We've been kind of
at
the bottom
of the
barrel for a while.
It's been a long 2,000 years.
Yeah, really.
It's better than the Middle Ages.
Yeah, that's true. We have a little bit better health care.
Yes, we do.
We still have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. Well, your second chapter is entitled You Are Never Alone. And this is the thing that that I noticed. I had my awakening, or whatever you want to call it, in around, as many people did. I mean, I've done this radio show for 23 years, so I talk a lot to a lot of people who woke up. And they say that the early 90s was very, late 80s, early 90s was a time that a lot of awakenings occurred, probably because of the harmonic convergence. Mm-hmm. So you really are never alone. After you reach a level of a certain awareness, loneliness goes out the door. It just doesn't exist anymore. One of the best benefits of being in this state, I think.
Absolutely. And I think it is because in that moment of enlightenment or awakening, we cultivate a deeper level of connection with our essence. And then in that, we're feeling that we are truly one with everyone and everything from the most divine place.
Yeah, that's true. And also animals respond differently to you after you awaken. You know, there's many stories about even wild animals approaching people that are awake and not having fear, the normal fear that they would have. It's just very interesting. Mm-hmm. The energy fields are different, and you can see it in the environment. You can see it in other people. You can see it in, especially in animals.
Yes, and I think that they're responding to, I mean, I've had that experience with myself in the wild and with just critters in my life and in other people's lives. And I kind of think of it from the perspective of, as we're holding this really deep level of connection with our essence, we are then cultivating a stronger field vibration of safety inside ourselves. And that's actually the very first quality of a healer. And so when there is that safety within, then we create a safe field for others. And so their fear actually goes away because they're being positively, empathically impacted by us. As we're holding our safety, they start to feel safer inside themselves, and then they'll naturally approach, and that's the same with people as well.
Yeah, I had an experience. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution was here doing a story on healing, and I was just doing some laying on the hands on a patient that actually was also a full clairvoyant, so her energy field was pretty good too. And the photographer for the story came in, and I was just doing the healing, and he was taking pictures. And then he said he had had a really bad migraine all day, but when he walked into the healing room, it went away instantly. So that's an example of your field effect. And that's what I said to him. I said, yeah, you know, what we're doing here creates a field, and then things that are not good go away when you enter the field. You know, that's all it
right.
is. It's a healing is a field effect. It was a good example of that. So
yeah, that vibration just increases, and that's an interesting concept about creating that field. And I was in meditation kind of exploring that concept and exploring all of the variables and the impacts, and discovered that if I'm attached to somebody else's behavior or them being healed or happy or safe or connected or healthy or whole, then I end up taking energetic responsibility for their journey, and then my energy fields of coherence go from 100 to 0. And so it's this stance of the healthy co-creative healer, which I think you were holding, and then creating that field of only attached to your own vibration, only responsible for your own energy, modeling the solution, and then it creates this very strong coherent field that does positively, empathically impact others.
Yeah, you can never tell what's going to happen on the healing table. There was a patient that I had that I was doing a healing on, and she asked if it would heal her breast issue. And I said, you know, I really don't know. I said, sometimes it does something totally different than what I think it's going to do. And she called me up later and said that her sister, who had been estranged from her for over 15 years, had called her that night.
How beautiful.
Her breast issue was still there, but, so it's true. I mean, you don't know what healing is going to be brought in, you can't be attached to it. A lot of times, as you know, when you do healing, pain goes away. I mean, that's kind of just a vibrational thing. But true healing, which is, you know, changing relationships and changing discordant emotions and thoughts, can also occur just from laying hands on somebody.
Yeah, and I think that also what happens is when you're laying hands on someone, some energetic part of you is communicating with their energy self,
mm-hmm.
and that you're sending information far beyond the mind's awareness to them. They're extracting whatever is appropriate and then bringing mm-hmm. it in for themselves in their own unique way. And so I think that, you know, 90% of the healing that is happening far outside the consciousness, the awareness.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I get impressions sometimes. Like, a lot of times I'll get impressions of how an injury occurred or why somebody has a metastatic lesion where they do, which is, by the way, often past injury, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there's a whole bunch of information there that's beyond what, you know, I'm conscious of.
Right. So. Very cool. Very cool.
So your next chapter is You Can Change Your Inner World. And how do we do that?
Well, we can do that through a lot of different means, meditation, breath, awareness, but I essentially developed very specific protocols that could be called prayers, and there's very specific steps. And essentially the very first step is to bring your awareness into what I call the divine line. It's a river of light that actually flows up and down the front of the spine. It's, from my mm-hmm. perspective, it's where the soul rides in the body. And so when you as a soul are holding a different vibration in that inner river of light, you are then starting to reflect and magnetically draw to you different situations in your outer world. So I really think of our physical life as a reflection of what's going on in our internal reality. And so if mm-hmm. I'm in a place of lack in my outer life, where am I connecting with lack deep in my core? And then finding that place inside where I'm absolutely enough, where there's a vibration of fulfillment, continuing mm-hmm. to connect with that, amplify that, and then that starts shifting the consciousness, the vibration, the magnetic attraction, and the reflection phenomenon. And then mm-hmm. over time, we slowly start bringing in more fulfilling experiences that are the reflection of the internal reality. So it's just using that framework of the outer world simply as the surface of the mirror to help us shift our internal reality. And it's also taking personal responsibility for your own energy that you're holding inside yourself, as opposed to thinking anyone is doing anything to you. So as soon as you mm-hmm. take that personal responsibility, you move out of the victim, which is incredibly empowering. And then you actually have the capacity to start making very specific choices about your internal reality.
Okay. So the next chapter is Your Challenges Can Help You Grow.
Yes, they can.
That's true.
In fact,
probably the only way we do grow is through our challenges.
Well, when we're at a certain point of consciousness or asleepness, right, if we're not really, mm-hmm. really aware, we will use painful situations to get our attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so our challenges can be uncomfortable. And from my perspective, the challenge is simply step one. And most people aren't aware of the step two. So if mm-hmm. we look at our outer challenges or where we're struggling or suffering, and then we go, okay, this has gotten my attention. I'm now going to release this outer situation as a mechanism for waking me up. I'm now going to take personal responsibility for cultivating the vibration that I'm really intending on mastering inside myself. So mm-hmm. I kind of think of it as the flip it. So whatever challenge you have, if it's lack or fear of abandonment or fear of not having safety, we always want to flip that challenge to the opposite or the solution. If it's the victim, it's empowerment. Abandonment would be connection. Depression would be joy. Betrayal would be inner commitment. And mm-hmm. So when you recognize, oh, I've created this gnarly outer situation, what is the opposite? What's the flip? And mm-hmm. then instead of using these outer environments, relationships, scenarios, we take a deep breath in. We pull our energy and awareness into our divine line. We invite that energetic aspect of us to begin activating the quality, the vibration of that which we are intending on mastering. So it would be greater mm-hmm. fulfillment or greater connection or greater safety inside ourselves. Now we're meeting our own needs deep in our own core. And then we release this outer challenge for helping us wake up, and we take personal responsibility for waking ourselves up in our own unique way by cultivating coherent harmonic vibrations inside ourselves. So it ends up being a very effective, efficient, painless mechanism for awakening. And sometimes we get to a certain point of being awake where our struggles and our suffering and our challenges become intolerable. And that's an indicator that you're awake enough that you no longer need to use the pain and the suffering to get your attention. It's already gotten your attention, and now you're ready mm-hmm. for step two to do that deep inner work.
That's a good way to put it. So the full protocol is listed on page 104 that you just described.
Yeah, so, and it's super basic. It's just you invite this energetic aspect of you, your body, mm-hmm. your team, that angelic presence around you, I call it the sacred trinity, to activate the vibration of, and then you fill in the blank. And mm-hmm. then you do have to take a deep breath in, ideally close your eyes, imagine an inner river waterfall that's carrying that quality of that vibration that you're intending on mastering inside yourself, flowing vertically within you. Your body has a river of light that flows through the spinal cord. So that current is happening in the body deva. And then you've got this angelic presence called the team, your guides, that are also holding it inside themselves.
And you have some YouTube videos. You want to talk about those and maybe some of your contact information?
Yeah, I think I have maybe 50 different YouTube videos and I think 11 free conscious conversations that talk about the energetics, and I also do daily meditations. They're little 7-minute audio meditations with protocols and sound healing. And then once every 3 weeks, I do Tall Cups of Consciousness, which is an hour-long energy balancing session. And I've been doing it since 2009, so I think I have about 1,600 meditations online so far. So it just continues to be, you know, a journey of building a massive library for people to in a very easy, accessible way. We have an app called Cups of Consciousness that people can start exploring their energy fields and waking up to mm-hmm. a greater degree and strengthening their energetic muscle so that they can release their pain, their suffering, and really activate the vibrations that they're intending on moving into and embodying. I have a website, aleyadao.com, aleyadao.com, and people can also go to cupsofconsciousness.com.
Great. Now, the fifth cup is your body is a nature spirit. Would you like to explain that?
Yes. So we've got this physical human form that we're in, and when we ride in the physical dimension, we have access to a physical empathic experience. But from my perspective, we are beings of light. We're actually not physical. We're just having this human experience. But again, you're not your body. And so when the body passes, you go back into your etheric form and express yourself in a higher dimension. And so the body has its own unique consciousness, and it's actually quite primal. It is from this world. It's actually 80% water, and it's when you're on a good hydration day. And it's interesting, the planet is 80% water. And so if we recognize that our body is from this world, of this world, has the consciousness of Earth, and we remind our body that it is from this world, it starts cultivating a deeper level of connection with itself and feeling that incredible state of oneness. And a few months ago, I was having a communication with my body and falling asleep, and I said, you know, body, I really want to experience what it's like for you to be in your fully connected state. And so in this dream, I was actually in a horse, riding literally on the front of the spine of the horse, as opposed to being like the rider on the back of the horse. And mm-hmm. as I was in this horse, I could feel the horse around me, and I could feel the horse literally being able to feel the rock on the ground before the foot or the hoof hit the ground. Mm-hmm. And I could feel the wind before the wind even was inhaled. And so my body was showing me that when you are in that nature consciousness, you are one with all aspects of nature. And it was this extraordinary state of oneness. And so I woke up in the morning and I was like, oh my God, that's phenomenal. And so what happens is our body will absorb our perception of disconnection, try to process it. But the journey, I think, from my perspective as a soul, is to ride in the body and let the body move into that total awareness of oneness, positively, empathically impact us as the soul riders, so that we then have the capacity to cultivate an even deeper level of awareness of oneness inside ourselves and with the universe.
Yeah, as a medical intuitive, this is what really the gift is. When you experience something within your own body, you experience it at a level where you have understanding of what's going on. And what I do with patients is sometimes I'll merge with them energetically, and then I'll feel in my body what's wrong with them, and then I can do that analysis and get a lot more information about what it is that is causing them problems.
Beautiful. Yeah, and that, I would say that from my languaging, I would say your body, Deva, is tapping into their body, empathically experiencing their stuff, and then that gives you massive amounts of information, then you know how to help them.
Right, yeah, because you actually feel it in your body. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a trip. No, the disorienting thing is that when somebody is highly empathic and they don't know they're empathic, they think they're the ones that have, you know, the brain tumor or the low back pain, and it's like, not even yours. And the challenge with energy is that we can typically only shift our own issues. And so a lot of the clients that I work with, it's really cleanup, because they've been struggling with a very particular pattern for years and years and trying absolutely everything to shift it, but it's not theirs, which means they can't. And so what's really being asked for is, when we have that empathic sensation, that's an indicator we have information for that individual. As soon as we send the information, release the responsibility, lift off the attachment, the empathic sensation usually clears.
Right. Yeah. And after you, for a while after I had that wake-up experience, I would be very careful about going out in crowds or, even with low-energy individuals, because I would pick stuff up just without meaning to. But eventually you do get to the point where you can put it more under volition, you know, do it when you want to do it and not just do it when you're out at Walmart or something, which is not real helpful, because you pick up everybody's backache and headache and everything. I had a funny thing happen with my father. I was talking with my father on the phone long distance, and he had bursitis in a hip. And then all of a sudden, I had the pain, and he didn't have the pain. And I'm sitting there going, what do I do with this pain? So I went and took a Motrin. So that was really hilarious. That was before I figured out that I could probably release the pain.
Did
he was
Motrin
really
help?
Happy. Yeah, like it was gone. So I'm sitting there, I'm limping, you know, like, hell, what did I just do? That was before I figured out a little bit more about, you know, let's not do this just because you love somebody. Let's not take all their pain away.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I've actually found that sometimes when I do have empathic sensations, like a headache or particular pain, and I take something for it, if it's energetic, whatever that substance is I'm taking to relieve it doesn't work.
And that to me is an indication of like, oh, this is empathic.
You might not think it would because it's not inflammation probably at the cellular level. It's probably at a little bit higher level. And you could probably just release it if you just released it. You know, it's a little easier to get rid of than if your hip really was inflamed.
True.
Okay, the sixth cup. Your soul has wisdom and inner gifts.
So when I started exploring all these concepts, and my memory of previous incarnations, and some people believe in previous incarnations, some people don't, but in all the work that I've done with myself and with other people, the information that each individual has, it's absolutely impossible that they gathered it in 20 years or 30 years or 50 years or 60 years. It's like, no, you've been like, God knows how many lifetimes you've been sitting in a Zen monastery cultivating this vibration of peace because it's profound, or whatever the quality is. And then I'll meet little kids who are like 5 and 6, and they have this incredible, profound wisdom. And so those wisdoms, those pearls of mastery that each soul has attained is our greatest gift. It's what supports us. It is what protects us. Now, the challenge with our gifts is that when we've attained a particular gift, we deeply value it. But then in deeply valuing it, we might want it for other people. So if I've attained this vibration of peace inside myself, and then I look at humanity and I'm like, oh, if only they could have that peace as well, because how wonderful it is to live in this. But in that desire for other people to have the peace, I now put my attachment and my desire for them to have peace on them. Then I unconsciously, energetically take responsibility for them attaining that state of peace. Then I put my peace, my gifts, it's like my fabric of peace, on them. Now I don't have my gifts for myself, and now I'm in their inner conflict, inner war. Now I'm not holding a strong, coherent field. And so often our greatest challenge is actually our greatest gift, and we're just empathically experiencing the pain and the suffering of the people that we truly want to help. So it kind of comes back to that whole concept of I'm only attached and responsible for my own vibration, holding my gifts deep in my own core, modeling that to humanity. If they get it, they get it. If they don't, at least you've been modeling it in your fields.
Yeah, the lack of expectation just in general is a better path than having expectations. it's a lot easier path to walk down. So I think
that's
true. Just like you say, when on the healing table, you know, the energy coming through is going to do what it's going to do, and then it's almost like there's sometimes you don't know what. Well, most of the time you don't know what it's going to do, but it's also not up to you to, make the person heal, which is what...
Exactly. I think of it as cliff jumping. I personally am not a cliff jumper. I don't really like heights. My body doesn't anyway. But when we cliff jump, you know, you just have to let go completely. And so anytime I go into a session... It is literally like just jumping off a cliff and knowing something is going to catch us and guide us and move us forward, but with absolutely no agenda of what that is.
In my meditation group, the theme for a while now has been you're on a train, and you know your job is not to jump off the train because of what you think you need to do. It's to stay on the train, and the train is going where it's going, and everything's fine. You know, everything's taken care of. So it's trust and allowance and faith and not taking action just because you're worried that the train isn't going to get you where you need to go.
That's a beautiful analogy. And then also, too, the journey of, like, so if we're all on the train, how do we truly want to hold ourselves while we're on the train? You know, do we want to enjoy our journey? And, you know, a lot of people take a lot of energy and time focusing on what they want to manifest in the physical dimension. I was in meditation, I want to say about a year ago or 2 years ago, and I was exploring the whole concept of manifestation, and I was having a conversation with my guides, and I was like, well, what if this doesn't happen in the outer world? And they said, well, this vibration that you're holding inside yourself of fulfillment or connection or whatever it was, how does that feel for you just on a daily basis? And I was like, well, it's lovely. And they said, well, okay, regardless as to whether or not this happens in the outer world, it doesn't really matter because you will have spent your time here in this world holding a higher vibration, a more peaceful stance. It's going to be far more enjoyable regardless of what happens in the outer world. So when we lift our attachment off of what we want in the outer world and we hold our attachment, our focus, more on the energy that we're holding inside ourselves and living in every single day that's impacting us at a very deep, profound level, that's when we create an even stronger field and we really move out of the suffering. Because any time we get attached to something happening in the outer world, we create expectations that which inevitably end in disappointment, and we move into a state of suffering. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a lot of it's just faith that that basic needs will be taken care of always, and that guidance can be given to get you out of any situation you find yourself in, and that non-attachment, which you just explained very well, is really the highest path, because you really don't know what is in store for you. Even when you're clairvoyant, the major things in your life are never shown to you. And so that's an interesting, you know, I guess it would take the surprise out of things, too. So.
It does, and I had an interesting experience. I sat in meditation, I think it was in 2007, and I said, oh, I just want to, you know, take a look and see what's coming down the pike over the next 2 years. Thank God I only said 2 years. And I saw all of these wonderful things happening, and perfect and lovely and wonderful. And so I totally knew what was coming down the pike. And then these things would happen. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I know that was going to happen. That was going to happen. And it was the best 2 years from all outer perspectives. But I experienced this deep, profound depression because I already knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so there was no mystery. And so, you know, I do warn people who do have, you know, that clairvoyant capacity with your own personal life and even for other people is to focus more on qualities of like, okay, so really hold this vibration inside yourself in the, you know, this next year or 2 years. Because if we know the details of what's going to happen, it does create this sort of flat, blah, yeah, I knew that. That's great.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting process. And to clarify about the attachment, we all have attachment, but the variable is where are we holding our attachment? And so from my perspective, to be more attached to the vibration flowing within you than anything in the outer world. And so we've got these attachment nuggets, and we want to put them somewhere. A lot of us will put them on the outer world or the car or the house or the home or the partner or the finances. And I recommend putting all of your little attachment nuggets in your divine line.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
and filters. There, one of some of the spiritual teachers I've interviewed talk about filters that change our consciousness, and really spiritual growth is a process of removing those filters, so that the energy coming in doesn't have to be distorted as it goes out and creates our reality. So you know, like you say, the if you hold the highest vibration within you. For any particular you know, topic that we're discussing, then and then do releasing work to release the filters that could distort the energy. I think that, that's another thing that is important to do. You know, like a filter that you know, all doctors are bad, or a filter that all men are, you know, abusive. These kind of filters. Those are extreme examples, but you know, there are other more subtle. Money is bad. You know, that kind of thing. These filters will prevent certain things from being created in your outer reality.
Definitely. And I love that you're using the word filter. And I'm just going to kind of spin on that interesting conversation with this. That if we think about, like, let's say all doctors are bad or all men are evil, then what we'd do is we'd look at it, okay, so if all, let's go with the all men are evil. If you think all men are evil, what is that giving you? So we're actually going to look at it from a positive perspective. Well, if I think all men are evil, then I'll stay away from men, and then I'll be protected, and then if I'm protected, then I'll be safe. and I won't experience pain. So actually what we're after is safety. But we're using the belief system or the frame or the filter of all men are evil as a way of getting safety. Right. But it doesn't really work. And so the more, so then we, if we, as soon as we recognize what we're really after, then we can actually take that step two and go, okay, I'm just going to activate the vibration of safety in my divine line, divine cosmic loop every single day for me, my body, my team. Yeah. And then the filter changes because now we have greater discernment and we're holding more safety inside ourselves. And then we start drawing to us safer people, people who have greater safety inside themselves. And we have a different perception, i.e. magnetic attraction. So that would be kind of how I would work with a filter of identifying the quality, then activating the quality within, but looking at it from a positive perspective.
Right, yeah. The filter exists mainly because of past life or current life, you know, one-time learning things, you know, these phobias, like the phobia of closed spaces, claustrophobia, the phobia of heights, often traces back to a past life death or near death where something happened, either falling off or being pushed off at a height or they're being buried alive, you know, those kind of things. So, there's actually a reason for the phobias.
Absolutely.
But when you realize that it was a one-time learning thing that you just have to release, then you can release some of the phobias. That's an extreme example, but, you know, other
fears. No, but it's very,
fears.
It's valid. Yeah,
yeah,
it's totally valid. And I just flashed on last weekend. I was at Morro Bay, and I was hiking, and I was by myself, and I was standing at the edge of a cliff. And I was like, what if somebody came up from behind me and pushed me off this cliff, and I died? And then I was like, oh, that happened. And so I actually went back in time to the debrief at the end of that incarnation, activated the vibration of the spiritual lesson, and then that fear of standing at the edge of the cliff, having somebody push me off, it went away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you do have to undo it.
Yes.
It's a protective mechanism is what it is.
Sure.
I mean, it's at the level of the body diva, you know, that that actually the energy part that follows you lifetime to lifetime, that it's just warning you at a very basic level that you might be in danger. And
absolutely.
That's the way I kind of look at phobias, that they have to be undone in that manner.
And
so the seventh cup, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to kind of speak about that a little bit because it's a really fascinating book, and it's how emotions are made. And they talk about the predictability and all of the exposure that we've had and how, you know, 70 to 80% of our cognitive function is actually predictable of things that we've experienced in previous incarnations and this incarnation that give us this whole programming. So, anyhow. But Chapter 7.
Well, let's talk a little bit more before we go to seven. Let's talk a little bit more about the value of releasing things from past lives. Do you ever have that happen spontaneously in the healing room?
Absolutely. And so when I'm working with somebody, I kind of think of myself as like a detective. So they have a particular challenge, and then I drop into a very still space and basically kind of scan their journey, their files, their previous incarnations to see where the root of that challenge is coming from. And sometimes it is coming from a previous incarnation, a trauma that they did have that they did not fully heal. And when I say heal, I mean to go back to that previous incarnation. Let's say somebody got tortured and killed and they were betrayed by their community. So now they always feel like an outsider. They never feel like they belong, and they're constantly fearing persecution. But nothing's actually happened in this incarnation that would explain why they have that stance. So we find that previous incarnation, and then I actually invite their energy self to actually go back in time, in that time spiral continuum that we live in, to go back in time to the debrief at the end of that incarnation, because often if somebody's still challenged by a particular situation that happened in a previous incarnation, it's because they didn't have a full debrief. Mm-hmm. Souls that love themselves tremendously do very thorough debriefs. But early on in your evolution, you have not yet cultivated self-love. And so your debrief is going to be quick, short, easy, or no debrief at all. No, I don't want to mm-hmm. debrief that last incarnation. It sucked. I just want to go back down and get it again.
Right.
And it's like,
really?
Not think about it. And so we take them back to the debrief, and then I invite mm-hmm. them to activate the vibration of the spiritual lesson in their divine line, mm-hmm. same for their body and their team in the debrief. And so now they're right. holding greater discernment, greater empowerment, greater commitment, greater loyalty to themselves. And then the trauma is no longer the trauma. So on some level, you completely transform all of that fuel of the fear of persecution, the betrayal, the resentment, the anger, the fear, into mm-hmm. the vibration of the spiritual lesson. So I really see emotions and traumas simply as units of fuel holding a very particular vibration. As soon as you activate the vibration of the spiritual lesson, you take those units of fuel, energy in motion, you move it up into a higher vibrational state, a higher consciousness in the divine line of the soul, the body, the team. Then you reflect it through the time spiral continuum to the present breath of now. Then you update their reference points. Then you bring their energy and awareness back into the present moment. And then you have them check the fear, and usually it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, it's not, it's not so much a release. I look at kind of everything from the perspective of how is this fear, this trauma, good? What is it you're really after? Then we go back to that origin point, activate that quality, and then it shifts their emotional experience around it.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, chapter 7. You are perfect.
You are. There is this light that flows within you, and that light, it's within everybody. Everybody has this mm-hmm. divine line, this exquisite light, and everybody's divine line light is slightly different, like a raindrop or a snowflake. And so when we start connecting with that divine part of us that runs in this divine line on the front of the spine, and we feel our perfection there, we then start cultivating greater degrees of self-worth, self-confidence, mm-hmm. self-love, self-acceptance, which holds incredibly high vibrational frequencies. And now we start moving just up, up, up into a higher vibrational terrain. And then we start drawing to us higher vibrational people that also hold a mm-hmm. level of self-love. And so sometimes I'll meet people and they're like, oh, everybody's so mean in the world. And I'm like, really? I haven't been meeting them, right? Like, I don't interact and engage mm-hmm. with the meanies because it's just not the radio station that I'm listening to. And so, or holding inside myself. So if you have people in your life that are really challenging, ask yourself, well, where are you holding a challenging energy inside yourself? The more you mm-hmm. cultivate that state of self-love and connection with the essence, the easier your life becomes. And I was talking to a little girl one day, and she was about 7, and we were talking about perfection, and she goes, well, no one's perfect. And I said, well, everyone's perfect. And she's like, no, they're not. And I was like, but they all have this little river of light inside that is absolutely perfect, and if we only look for our perfection there, then we experience this incredible freedom and expansiveness with our journey. And we don't have that outer pressure of having to be perfect or, oh, it's not perfect enough. And so I think anytime we experience the self-critic, that's actually just a little tap-tap, nudge, uncomfortable mm-hmm. nudge, granted, to get our attention to find our perfection deep within.
I read something the other day about, I don't know if it was your book or another book. It might have been another book I was doing. A quote from one of the authors saying, it's always so much easier to see the best in everyone. It saves so much time and trouble. And I think that that's so true.
It is true. But the only way to see the best in others is if you see the best in yourself.
True, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't have
it. You can't give away what you don't have. And you can't understand. Or you can't. You just can't do it.
Right.
So chapter 8 is empathetic sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, the more evolved we become, the more empathic we become. And there's mm-hmm. a couple reasons for that. So as we evolve and we tap into our gifts, our wisdom, our mastery, what we really value, then there is that tendency to take this mastery that we have and want it for others. And when we want it for others, I spoke a little bit about then we take this energetic responsibility, and then with that responsibility comes all the empathic sensations. So now we're holding this mastery, and we're empathically feeling other people's pain and suffering, which can help us cultivate compassion with our mastery so that we don't become arrogant. And also, if we're empathic, that's an indicator we have information for the person that we're feeling. And so anytime you're empathic, the very first thought is, oh, I must have information for them. Send information and then hold compassion. Now, sometimes compassion is very layered. It's a very complex, highly evolved consciousness that souls take lifetimes to embody. And so one way to cultivate compassion is to actually feel into your gifts, your wisdom, your mastery that you've taken lifetimes or thousands of moments to attain, a vibration of peace or clarity or integrity, and move into a deep level of gratitude for all of the moments it took you to attain this. Mm-hmm. As you move into that gratitude for your own inner gift, you then start to move into a higher vibration and then have the ability to hold compassion with somebody who has not yet attained this gift, hasn't taken all of those moments to attain it. And then it's not pity, it's really compassion while you model the solution and you hold a safe and loving space for them to be in whatever they're in, but you're not attached nor are you responsible for their journey, because we all know that that's not a comfortable stance. So if somebody encounters, if I encounter somebody and they say, oh, Alea, I think you should cultivate dot, 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 I immediately respond with, really, that's not your job to determine. It's like for you to be, to care and to be concerned with a vibration. That's on me. And so it's incredibly disempowering for us to project what we value onto other people, and it's incredibly arrogant as well. So the moment we're in that arrogance, right around the corner is humbled to be pummeled by people's empathic sensations. So it's fairly complex, but I've tried to simplify it so that it's like step one, step two, step three in chapter 8 of how to get out of the empathic sensations and cultivate greater degrees of humility and gratitude for your mastery as you become more and more evolved. Because the more evolved you get, the more careful you want to become, more aware you want to become of not being arrogant.
Right. That's true.
Because that's just a dark road.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. It's aleyadao.com, aleyadao.com. And then all of your listeners, I'd love to gift them with a free week of the Daily Cups of Consciousness and a free Tall Cups of Consciousness. And they can go to cupsofconsciousness.com. And on my website, I have tons of meditations and also free meditations, and I do sound healing, and I also have 9 sound healing albums that people can check out on Amazon, on my website, and CD Baby. And then I also do daily energetic forecasts, so the energy coming onto the planet today can help you cultivate greater clarity or peace or empowerment. And then I do those little daily meditations that speak to the energetic weather, but do the energetic weather sort of report on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn.
Great. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a great conversation.
Well, it's great connecting with you, and thank you so much, and thanks for the work that you do in the world.
Well, great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Alea Dao on 7 Cups of Consciousness. Next week, we're going to be interviewing the author of White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. Please join us next week.